On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Jack Miller to uncover how to make money in today's environment.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover how to make money in today's environment. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons, and I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point, if you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person who has loaned, been involved in more than 10,000 loan transactions. Ultimately, he got into this business in 1989 and has seen a world of difference in the lending space since then. I would describe today's Maverick, someone who's passionate about doing deals, finding good deals to do with good borrowers and a proper structure to ultimately create that win-win between the borrower and the lender. Today's Maverick, I've got Jack Miller here with me today. Now, for those avid listeners, he's a repeat guest, so I'm excited to have him here. But in case you're new, didn't listen to the last one, Jack, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Great to see you again. My name is Jack Miller. We're in the private lending and real estate investment space. I'm with a company called Gelt Financial, which I started in February 1st, 1989.
Yeah, incredible. Well, the reason I want to have you back on because 2023, the world completely changed as we know it from a lending perspective, like real quick. We had never seen interest rates move as hard and as fast, specifically the five-year treasury. Doubled inside of a year. It's never happened in history. And so a whole bunch of things have taken place and certainly it impacted banks. And then your world, which means some avenues, I suspect, for the better and some avenues a little more challenging. So that's why I wanted to have you back on and just talk about the world. Tell me, you started in 1989. What got you into the lending business in 89?
I just was always attracted and fascinated by it. I really can't tell you. And sort of dumb luck and my fascination with it has always been the magnet to it. And I love it. And I've always loved it. You're right. It's been some challenges over the years. There's always challenges. As you said, the market, the rates went up very quick. I remember when they came down very quick. There's always challenges. I've just loved the lending space and the real estate investing space. Very passionate about it. And I live and breathe it and could go on about it all day and love talking to people about it.
You're not a bank. And that is a benefit. And banks sit in a very well-defined box in most cases. What's the difference? For some people, maybe somebody is more traditional, maybe not as active. They think, well, if I'm going to borrow money, I borrow money from a bank, period. There's no next person. There's no additional thought. Where do you fit inside that space? And maybe another question is, why do you exist?
So banks are heavily regulated. And most people don't realize this, but just about almost every credit decision being made in a bank is being made by the federal government. Because of the regulations, even so much as car loans, credit cards, just about everything. You think you're going to XYZ local bank, But because they're regulated, it's really the federal government who's making the ultimate credit decision. Now, they're not looking at your application per se and saying, oh, Jack Miller or Bill Jones or Mary Smith. But through their guidelines, they affect banks' behavior. So the federal regulators can tighten credit or loosen credit through their standards and the capital ratios. And for the past number of years, the banks have been tightening credit and been much tougher on banks, and banks have been much more restrictive. So there's always been a place where people can't go to banks. But lately, the past 10 years or so, as a result of the 2006 to 11 crisis, it's been exacerbated, and more people can't go to a bank or don't want to go to a bank. And they come to companies like us who don't have regulators on our back. We don't interact with regulators. We have nothing to do with them. We can do basically whatever we want. We're lending our own money and our investors' money, so we can do whatever we want. So we and other lenders use common sense in their approach and can do things quick and things that banks can't do. So people who either don't have time to go to a bank come to us, people who don't want to deal with the bank's regulations and paperwork come to us, or people who can't go to a bank come to us. One more thing, because we're much, I don't say much, we're more expensive than a bank. So there's a price to be paid. People are going to pay more to deal with me, but they're getting the access they can't get with the bank or the speed they can't get with the bank. So if someone has time, they should go to a bank.
We used to buy houses direct from home sellers, bought hundreds and hundreds direct from home sellers. And I know a number of listeners do. We'll buy it as is. We'll pay cash. We can close in 5 days. When I say as is, I mean, you don't want that living room couch or that kitchen table. Don't move it. Leave it right there. I'll take it. Can I give you the highest price that exists in the environment? No. I provided you a whole range of services that a traditional realtor, which I was and have been for years and years, that they could never give you, right? So there's a trade-off. There's a range of benefits, and they're not necessarily price-driven, just like a borrower is not necessarily interest rate-driven to get a deal done, because there's times I suspect that you can close, you can execute on a deal that a buyer of that deal would lose if they had to go to a bank.
100%. That's why people are coming to us.
Give me an idea on a couple of points, maybe thinking outside of the box, some of the creativity that you guys do that a bank would not do, whether it's cross-collateralization, whether it's an equity component, whatever it may be, that just an avenue that separates you from what a bank does.
Primarily talking about the debt space, but we're also active in the JV equity space. But in the debt space, I'll tell you a deal we closed, I think, 2-3 weeks ago. Borrow comes to us. They were buying a property for about, I think, $450, $475, something like that. I'm going to just say $500 for round number. They only had like 10% down. One of the people here looked at them and they owned another property about the same amount of money with no mortgage. A bank's not going to do a 90% LTV, and their credit was a little beaten up. We said to them, hey, are you willing to use the other property as additional collateral? They said, sure. We closed the deal, by the way, with no money down. In their eyes and the mortgage broker's eyes, it was 100% loan to value. In our eyes, it was like a 50% loan to value because we took both properties. So that's one basic example of what we can do that others can't do, that banks traditionally won't do. And that's just the purest, the simplest. We do blanket liens and cross-collateralization liens. Working on a deal today in a suburb of Atlanta, they came to us. Again, wanted to put like 15% down. They've been rejected by everyone else. The SBA rejected them. We said, look, we can't do it. They said, what can we do? We said, we're comfortable with a 65% leverage point. We said to them, is the seller willing to hold a second? Bottom line, the seller was willing to hold a second. So they're putting 15% of their own money down. We're to 65 LTV. We're thrilled. They're thrilled. Seller, I guess, wants to sell the property, is comfortable taking a second for the difference. So these are two examples that happen all the time.
Yeah, but because your mindset, your ability to think outside the box, you ask that question and can structure a deal to achieve that proverbial win-win.
That's correct. That's one of the advantages people have to come to us because we're a private lender. We don't have regulators. Our sole thing is, are we going to lose money? And what we say, which is, it sounds terrible, but this is what we literally, the line you hear 100 times in my office a week is, if the bar gets hit by a bus right after closing, what's going to happen to us? And as long as we think we'll be okay, then we're interested in doing the deal. If we're scared the borrower is going to get hit by a bus, then we won't do the deal. Believe me, we don't want any borrowers to get hit by a bus or anyone. But that's ultimately what we say is what happens to us if something goes wrong. And if we think we'll be okay, we'll do the deal.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, let's talk about that. I'm curious, and I'll tie this to you, the passive investors listening. I'm going to tie this back to you now. They are hit by a bus. So in the scenario where there's a deal sponsor, they're putting a thing together, they're going off and raising money from limited partners, they are hit by a bus, what happens? And that's one of the questions that we get in our office is goes, what's your succession plan? And we have an answer. But what happens from a lender standpoint? You call on that note, you want that thing back, it's got to get wrapped.
Well, it all depends. So if a borrower is communicated and they reach out to us, we work with them. So right before this call, just was on a conference call with a borrower. They bought many, I'm going to say 3-4 years ago, a small shopping center is in a suburb of Chicago. Everything went wrong. Everything went wrong, including dealing with the city, raised the taxes. Their payment's supposed to be about 30 grand a month. We've been accepting about, I think, 24 or 25 grand a month for about a year, year and a half. We're going to modify it and accept the same amount for about another year to give them time. So, but they speak to us. So if a borrower is communicative and reaches out and says, look, this happened, that happened, I can't afford the payment, I can do this, this, and that, 99% of the time we work with them. Where, to be blunt, it gets ugly is if they stop communicating or they give you the finger. And sometimes they do that. But my experience over, again, 35 years doing this, if there's communication, you can almost always work it out. We bend over backwards to, okay, you can't make the payment this month. We put it on the back end. The payment's 2 grand. You can only afford 1,000. Okay, let's do 1,000 for 6 months. So there's usually a way to work it out. Again, when it gets ugly is when the borrower is shut down. And that happens sometimes. That, unfortunately, some people, look, when you have a problem, you can either run to the problem to try to solve it, or you run away from the problems. The ones who run to the problems, they can be solved. The ones who run away from the problems, sometimes it gets ugly. That's just the reality.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Yes, correct. The best investors that you deal with, beyond just communication, what two or three things do they do exceptionally well to go, yeah, it doesn't shock me. You're in your mind, you're going, it doesn't shock me when they hit another home run, when they get another win.
They know their strengths and weaknesses. We're all good and bad at different things. There's many parts of buying and investing real estate. There's buying it. There's fixing it up. There's dealing with the tenants. There's dealing with the paperwork. And then there's selling it. There's a lot of parts. And we're all not good at everything. So certain people have a problem that they want to do they think they're better at everything than anyone else. So maybe they're a great buyer, but they're a lousy manager. They should be giving it to a property manager. And I have a million stories of how great people screwed up by trying to do everything themselves. And they refuse to say, hey, I'm not good at this. Let me get someone else to do this for me.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is building a team around that ultimately their weakness is somebody else's strength.
100%. Early on in my career, I dealt with a guy in Philadelphia who was one of the best buyers of real estate I've ever seen. Bought beautiful real estate, bought it cheap. And he was in partnership with someone else. The partnership broke up. And what happened was within 3 or 4 years, he lost everything because his ego was too big to bring in a property manager. He was not good at the details of managing this stuff. And he ultimately lost most of it because of that. And I've seen that so many times where people just can't deal with everything. As you said, instead of bringing in a team, they screw it up. Or where I see people make mistakes is, and I have a line, I say more people and businesses die from indigestion today than starvation. And it's the truth. People are trying to do too much. They buy one property, two properties, three properties. They just keep going and they don't digest it. And inevitably there's a hiccup, a tenant stops paying them or something like COVID happens. They can't deal with it. So people sometimes look to bite off more than they can chew instead of doing something, letting it digest, doing something else, letting it digest. They say, oh, I made money on this. Let me go out and buy 10 more. Let me do 20 more. Let me buy $1 million or $1 billion in real estate. And you see that. In fact, when we look at people and we see their schedule of real estate, and you can see if they bought everything in the last 12 months, it's scary. I hope nothing goes wrong, but stuff always happens. Calamity is always right around the corner, unfortunately.
Are there particular asset classes that you do a lot of work in? And or the other side of the question is, are there asset classes that you completely stay away from?
Well, we stay away from land, new construction, and specialized properties. We like boring stuff. Single family homes, 1 to 10 units, retail strip centers, I hate to use the word sexy, but boring B and C class properties we love, whether it be flex space, self-storage, it could be hospitality, but boring stuff. We don't like the real glamorous stuff because that's a challenge to deal with.
When you say challenge to deal with, meaning it's a challenge to take it back.
Well, they're overpaying for it. They're overpaying. It's hard to lease them out. You have to get topped out on the leases.
Yeah.
The maintenance cost is higher. Again, sexy sales, but again,
margins are thin.
That's exactly right.
Which means in a thin margin environment, it means your margin for error is thin.
That's exactly right.
You got to be an incredible executor of that type of property.
And sometimes things go wrong. Stuff goes wrong in life. And the reality is our model is built to deal with what goes wrong. We know if something goes right, it's going to be a home run. But we're in the risk business. So when we look at a deal, we look and say, what can go wrong? And it happens all the time.
Let's talk about that risk business. When a borrower comes to you and they want to risk mitigate their loan, they just want to, whatever the best terms happen to be, you, a bank, it doesn't really matter. What is a couple, two or three things that borrower can conceive of or give thought to mitigate the risk of you, the lender?
From the borrower's side?
From the borrower's side, yeah. When they deliver a package to you to go, here's what we've done in our risk mitigation strategy to better execute.
A lot of packages we see are so optimistic, it's unbelievable. I looked at one last night, perfect example. A broker sends me an office building. I know the broker, good guy, sends me an office building like 60,000 square feet, but tons of vacancies. The rents are low. It appraised a couple of years ago for like, I think, $7 million. He's buying it at a short sale now for $2 million. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, we don't even think it's worth $2
million. Yeah.
The broker is literally emailing me and texting me till 11:30 at night. He's trying to get me to buy into the appraisal. And I'm saying, just because you have an appraisal from 2 years ago, it doesn't mean it's worth it. The world is cluttered with office buildings that are sucking wind that didn't appraise. And ultimately, and I kept saying, the bottom line is, I don't want to tell the history because it's a waste of time. He was foolishly optimistic.
Yeah.
He didn't build into his scenario, forget the appraisal, his scenario, CapEx, new roofs, new leasing commissions, tenants leaving. Borrowers sometimes take what a seller tells them or what a realtor tells them as gospel.
Yeah.
And they're just too optimistic. They haven't been beaten up or punched in the face. I think it was Michael Tyson who said, everything's great until you get punched in the face or something like that. The real estate business.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so, yeah, they come in too optimistic. And as a result, you who are the risk mitigation business, the business not to lose, look at this and you underwrite it in a completely different fashion.
That's correct. We underwrite based on what we think is realistic. And because we have a 30-something year history and we've done over 10,000 of these, I have a staff who can look at any type of product, office, hospitality, retail, self-storage, single family, you name it, anywhere in the U.S., and we can put a performer together, a realistic performer, better than an appraiser, better than a realtor. I don't mean to sound braggadocious. I realize it may come off that way. But because we deal with what can go wrong, we put together conservative performers. And that's what we go off of.
Since starting this business, what's the biggest change you've seen in the industry since then?
There's so much. It's the technology. It's the fact when I started in 89, I was in Philadelphia. You only knew Philadelphia real estate. You didn't even know Philadelphia real estate. You only knew certain neighborhoods.
Right.
But now you can get anything online. You can get comps online, costs online. You can see neighborhoods, crime data. You can see the board ups online. The technology has to be the number one thing.
Mm-hmm. What are you most excited about here in 2024?
I think, and I always think, there's so much opportunity out there for the person who's willing to go get it. And I'm saying it now in January of 24, but I could say this, you could have asked me this 15 years ago, there's always tons of opportunity. People have a tendency to say, oh, the rates are high, the rates are low, the prices are high, this is low, there's too much opportunity, there's opportunity, but there's always opportunity for those who want to go find it and create it. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity out there now for those who want to get it, just tremendous.
Let's do this. I'm going to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
They can't get over their own issues, whether it be raising capital. I talk to people and say, oh, I can't buy this because I don't have credit or I don't have capital. You can find capital for the right deals. You don't need the credit. There's always a reason not to do it. I'm sure you meet these people in life. You're either part of the solution or part of the problem.
Yeah.
So I think it's themselves.
Your passion outside of real estate?
Helping my community, helping people. I'm very big into philanthropy and helping people and uplifting people, trying to improve their lives.
Your favorite book?
It's hard to say that I'm an avid reader. I have a big library. I love Behind the Golden Arches, but there's so many books I've read that I love. I'm very into reading historical biographies because I learned so much by hearing the troubles and what other people went through. It inspires me.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Uplifting people. Everyone in our lives goes through bad times. And you have to try to be there for people going through challenges to uplift them. And I know when I went through very bad challenges, there were four or five or six people who uplifted me consistently, and they went out of their way to do it. And they were people who I didn't expect to do it, who I didn't know that well, who weren't part of, so to speak, an inner circle. And I really try to uplift people and build their spirits. Even if it's a simple waitress is having a bad day, I believe it's very important. I believe that's really my life's mission, is to uplift people and make them feel better.
I appreciate being here. I could literally talk to you for hours because I love the finance space, the debt space, and all the uniqueness and the creative structure that you put in place to help get deals and investors, both active and passive, ultimately, over the finish line. For people who want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
I have social media accounts, H. Jack Miller. Check me out wherever you want, on Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever. And check out GeltFinancial.com. We have a very, very active YouTube channel, and we try to be out there as much as we can in the social media world and on the internet.
Yeah. Links below in the show notes, everybody. Jack, I appreciate being here.
Thank you. My pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.